Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. There's a question here from Sarvagya Prabhu. He says, sorry, he's not here. But in Anuchet 62, six, unless Wadley comes. Okay, this is Sarvagya Prabhu's question. In Anuchet 46.2, it was stated that the Supreme Lord's pastimes are not restricted by time and space. In the material world, it is because of phases of those pastimes, because all phases of those pastimes are present in unlimited universes. But in the spiritual world, there is a division of pastimes. For example, what? Some lila does, Ashtakaliya lila does have phases of beginning and end. It seems that these pastimes are apparently limited by time and space, as it was stated in the Purva Paksha. How to reconcile that contradiction? Maybe it has to be explained in the commentary. Well, spiritual. See, the statement is that there's no restriction of time and space in the spiritual or. For the Lord's pastimes in the material or spiritual world. It's not that there's no connection with time or space. When the Lord enters with his pastimes in the material world, he accepts time and space. It becomes part of his pastimes. And it's not that there's no time and space in the spiritual world. Otherwise, it would just be abstract. But there's no limitations as there are in material time and space. In the material world, we are ruled by time. We are controlled by time. And we cannot do anything about it. Time goes inevitably forward. We can't reverse it. In the spiritual world, time goes, does whatever you want it to do. It's under our control. Not even just Krishna's control, because Krishna is in control of everything. But even in the spiritual world, we're in control of time. By our desire, they can go fast or slow, forward or backwards, or whatever we want. Anything can happen that we want to happen. Krishna will reciprocate with us. So there's a kind of pastime time and space, but it's not, has no restrictions. The Purva Paksha was complaining that there's limitation of time and space. But the Supreme Lord uses time and space for his pastimes. He appears big, he appears small, as suits his pleasure. There's no restriction. There's no being under control of that. Is that okay? All right. In Anuchet 46, we're discussing the statement by among the prayers of Gajendra about the Lord not having material name, form, qualities, but having some other different kind of such features, spiritual ones. I'll read again the verse as it's quoted at the beginning of the Anuchet. Na vidyate yasya chakarm janma karma va na nama rupe guna dosha eva va tatapi lokapyaya sambhavaya Swamaya yatan anukalam richati. He has no birth or activity, no name or form, no qualities or faults, but for the creation and destruction of this world. He assumes all these permanently by his own maya. Continuing the discussion of this explanation by Jiva Goswami, we're at paragraph 7. Nanu prapnoti ityupte. Did I read this already? Am I on 8 now? Okay. 8. Yata evam satyor api tad tadakara prakasha gatayos tad arambha samaptyor ekatrai katra tete janma karmanor amsha yavat samapyante nasamapyante va tavadev anyatra anyatrapi arabda bhavanti ityevam Shri Bhagavati Vicheda Bhavan Nitye Eva Tatra Te Janma Karma Ni Varte Te. This being true, this is that he has his eternal activities and his eternal qualities. Then also similarly infinite are the beginnings and completions which occur in the appearances of his various personal forms. He performs activities. Birth is an activity. Other activities. Activity, by the material definition, has to go through phases. It has to have a beginning. It has to progress through various phases to its completion. And that's an activity. Action. In the spiritual world also, there's such a progress, but it's not forced by the laws of time and space. There are the progressions in spiritual time of the Lord's pastimes. So, and also sometimes the Lord voluntarily enters the realm of time and space and shows his pastimes in the material world. So that whenever the various segments of his birth and activities are completed in one location or another, or even when they have not yet reached completion, immediately in some other locations they begin again. That's the situation in the material world. Thus, they are never absent from the personality of Godhead, which means that both of them, his birth and activity, occur eternally in him. This is important to understand his birth and activity. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvataha. Chakvar deham punar janma naiti mameti. Surjana, if anyone understands actually how Krishna takes birth and acts, then he won't have to himself take birth again in the material world. He'll go to Krishna. So it's important to try to understand this. Tatra te quachit kinchit vilakshana twain aiva arabhyate te quachit ekarupyena cheti geyam visheshana bedad visheshan aikyat cha. We can understand that they sometimes, that his birth and activities sometimes happen with certain differences, and sometimes in exactly the same way. Reoccurrence in different places, at different times of his activities, sometimes an exact repetition and sometimes there's variation. According to whether the circumstances vary or remain unchanged, according to the time and place where the activity is manifest. If the time and place is different, then the activity will be a little different. Eka ev akara prakasha bedena pritak priyaspadam bhavatiti chitram bataita dekena vapusha ityadau pratiparitam. That one and the same form can be the locus of different activities in separate appearances is established. Locus means location. So one and the same form can be, the same form can appear in different places. So you have separate appearances of the same form, and different activities can be manifested in all these different appearances. Again, that one and the same form can be the locus of different activities in separate appearances is established by such statements as that which begins, "It is quite amazing that in a single body," that's spoken by Narada when he visited Krishna's palaces, and he commented, "It's amazing that Krishna in the same body married the 16,000 queens, each in different places." Tatat kriya bedat, tatat kriyatmakeshu, prakasha bedesh, abhimana bedash, cha gamyate. Therefore, since the activities are different, we can conclude that the roles he identifies with also differ in his different appearances for these various activities. Well, he takes slightly different roles according to different circumstances. That means the mood changes. There's a shift in the bhava in different places. Krishna may have relationship pastimes with the gopis in the original Vrindavan, and there may be an opulent expansion of Vrindavan where he has pastimes with the gopis, but the mood is a little different. More opulence. I'm looking. Yeah. Visheshana Bedat, that's all. I just read Kwachit Kinchit Vilakshana 20 because there's some difference some place. So I converted that into different situations. Different time, different place, a different situation. Tata sati ekatrai katra lila krama janita rasod bodas chajayate. And this being so, that there were slightly different moods in these different manifestations of the same pastimes in different places and times. And this being so, wherever he performs his pastimes, various rasas exhibit themselves as the sequential flow of the pastimes generates them. There's a variety of rasas. As a rasa progresses in spiritual time, different rasas manifest at different times in the sequence. And if the same pastime is manifested in a different place at a different time, slightly different rasas will be manifested in a different situation. Okay, an attempt to describe spiritual time and space. It's a little hard to describe, but some attempt. The commentary on this. The personality of Godhead's eternal pastimes are not restricted by fixed scripts, like a script of a play, but can accommodate the liberty of variations as he and his devotees choose. These variations fool materialistic scholars into criticizing the Puranas for historical inconsistency. Lord Nrsimha, Lord Vamana, and other Tavatars appear relatively often, each time playing somewhat different pastimes. Here's a quote from the Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Vamanas tvir abhivyaktim kalpe smin pratipe divan tatradau danavendrasya baskaler advaram yayau tato vaivasvati esmin dundor makamasau gataha aditau kashyapad jata saptamesya chaturyuge pratigrahakrite jatas traya eva trivikramaha. Lord Vamana appeared three times in this day of Brahma. This is Laghu Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami. The first Vamana Dev visited the sacrifice of Baskali, king of the demons, at the beginning of the Kalpa. Then during the current Vaivasvata Manvantara, Lord Vamana went to the sacrifice of Dundu. And last, he took birth from Kashyapa in the womb of Aditi in the seventh yuga cycle of this Manvantara. Seventh or 28th? Seventh, it says. Thus, Lord Trivikrama was born three times for the purpose of taking charity, and three different demons were involved. Lagu Bhagavatamrita, third chapter. At the beginning of the Kalpa, he went to Bhaskali's sacrifice. Srila Sanatana Goswami tells us in his Digdarshani commentary on the Brihad Bhagavatamrita the following. Lord Narasimha also made several different appearances, as we know from such sources as the Brihad Sahasranama Stotra. One Narasimhadev defeated all the celestial mothers. Another ripped apart Hiranyakashipu, and then yet another assumed the form of an ordinary cat. There are also two appearances of Vamanadev to trick two different asuras, Dundu and Bali. And there were two appearances each of Lord Harigriva and Lord Hamsa. The verse Chitram Bataitare Kena has been discussed in the comments on a previous Anuchet, 41.1. So we won't give that verse again. You can go back and look at 41.1. It was spoken by Narada Muni after he visited Dwaraka and saw Krishna at home with in several of his 16,108 households. Narada didn't go to all of them. He went to a few. But he was amazed just from what he saw. Narada knew that what he saw was not different expansions from Krishna, but the same one Krishna present in all the palaces. No other form of God but the very original Krishna can, without expanding into separate forms, be in many places at once doing different things. So this ability to be the same form but be in many places, that only Krishna has, not Krishna's expansions. Krishna played different roles in each palace because the relationships he had with each wife, child, associate, and servant differed somewhat according to their individual personalities. He modified his reciprocation, his reciprocation like this increased the variety of ecstasies enjoyed in the exchange of rasas. So historians may complain that this is inconsistent, but Krishna likes it because it makes for more variety to do his pastimes a little bit different at different times and places. Krishna's internal energy, specifically his lila shakti, generates the ebb and flow of these bhavas in the course of his pastimes. Continuing, Nanu katam te eva janma karmani varte te ityuktam. But why do you say that the same birth and activities continue? Why isn't it different births and activities? It looks different. Ityuktam pritag arabdatvad anye evate. Purvapaksha says, rather, since they have separate beginnings, these are different births and activities. Same person, material living entity, is born, dies, and is born and repeatedly, but those are different births and activities of the same person. Why do you say that there's only one birth for Krishna, and his activities are the same even when he repeats them? Uchyate kala bedein oditanam api samana rupanam kriyanam ekatvam. In reply to this, it is said that equivalent actions are actually one and the same, even when they occur at different times. Yata Shankara Sharirake. Dwir go shabdo yam ucharita. Natu dwau go shabdav. Iti pratiti nirnitam shabdaika twam. Where did you see that quoted before? In the first chapter of the Alankar Kostaba, that's quoted also. Shankaracharya says in his Vedanta commentary, we ascertain the oneness of words by observing that what is said is the word cow has been pronounced twice, rather than two words cow have been pronounced. I say, look, there's a cow, there's a cow. So the proper way to explain that is that I've said the word cow twice, not that I said two different words cow. Tataiva dvikpaka krito nena, natu dvida paka krito neneta, neneti pratitya bhavishyati. Similarly, we expect to hear, he has done cooking twice, rather than hear, he has done two cookings. Cooking is cooking. There's variety in it, but how many times has he cooked in the last year? 5,033. So that's how many cooking, and how many times he did cooking. Cooking is one. Tato janma karma nor api nityata yuktaiva. Therefore, it is only reasonable that the Supreme Lord's birth and activities are also eternal. Tata choktam madhvabhashye paramatma sambanditvena nityatvat trivikrama tvadishu api upasamharyatvam yujyate iti. Madhvacharya, we quoted Shankara, now we quote Madhva. Madhvacharya similarly says in his Bhashya on Vedanta. Okay, I didn't read the Sanskrit. I'll read the Sanskrit of the skipped sentence. Ata eva agama dav api bhutapurva lilopasana vidanam yuktam. Therefore, it is only reasonable, no, I know, and it is also reasonable, right? It is all. I said, okay, therefore it is only tato janma karma norapi nityata yuktaiva. I think I read the Sanskrit. The English is, therefore it is only reasonable that the Supreme Lord's birth and activities are also eternal. I read that already. Then, it is also therefore reasonable that the agamas and other scriptures enjoin meditation on the pastimes of the Lord, which happened in the past. Agamas means pancharatras for us. They tell us to meditate on Lord Rama's, Lord Krishna's pastimes. But they're past. They're finished. What good is it going to do us to try to enter a pastime that's finished? But it's not finished. It's eternal, even though it occurred in the past. So you still can enter it. Therefore, meditate on it, even though it happened in the past. It's eternal. Okay. Madhvacharya similarly says in his Bhashya on Vedanta, it is appropriate that he, the Lord, should also be resorted to in his appearances as Trivikrama, Vamana, and so on, because these appearances belonging to the Supreme Lord are eternal. We want to worship the Supreme Absolute Truth. Why worship this avatar who only came for a short time, came millions of years ago, isn't here around anymore? But it's the same absolute truth, and those pastimes are eternal. That's Madhvacharya's statement. Anumatam chaitat shrutya yadgatam bhavat cha bhavishyat cha ityanayaiva. And this is not just the opinion of different acharyas and different sampradayas. It's also confirmed by the shruti. The shruti also infers this in the statement, whatever is past, present, and future. Of course, I don't have the rest of that statement. I don't even know where it comes from. But the activities of the Supreme occur in the past, present, and future. They're eternal. Upasamharya tvam upasanayam upadeya tvam ityartha. Shankaracharya, no. Madhvacharya used the term upasamharyatvam. That means, being resorted to is my translation of upasamharyatvam, but that means here being accepted as an object of meditation. These pastimes, like Vamana's pastimes, are resorted to. In other words, they're proper, appropriate objects of meditation. Because they're eternal. You want to worship, meditate on the supreme eternal truth, meditate on the Lord's pastimes. They're eternal. Commentary, the world as it really is involves both persistent existence and change. Things, including living things, continue to exist for extents of time, and they undergo changes in time. Okay, a living entity exists through time. It doesn't just exist only for a moment. And he undergoes changes. Not just the body, but the living entity. His consciousness changes. Looking at this reality, we describe it in language using nouns for the things and verbs for their changes. That's why we have different kinds of words. Nouns for the things that stay as they are, and verbs for processes of change. Certainly, something persisting from one moment to the next is the same thing. If it's persisting, it's the same thing, by definition. Some, like the Buddhists, deny this, arguing that nothing exists, or more properly, no things persist, including no soul. There aren't any things, so there's no soul, there's no God, because there's no things. But even if some impersonalists and abstract physicists live in a world of nothing but change, for the rest of us, reality includes real things. An action can also be considered as a thing if it continues or is repeated. Okay, actions are changes, but there's something persistent sometimes about actions. They go on for some time, or they happen again and again. So there's a persistence. Actions are also sometimes things. Language provides for this, turning verbs into adjectives and nouns. He never stops talking. Talking is a noun here, but it's derived from the verb to talk. He never stops talking. And in the opinions of the ancient and medieval proponents of Jaimini's hermeneutics, his interpretation codes of the Vedas, and of Gotama's epistemology, his science of knowing, logic, and of the school of analysis of Sanskrit grammar founded by Bhartrihari, the components of language, sounds, and the words they combine into are eternal. This is not accepted by the Buddhists, but it is accepted by these orthodox schools. The Jaimini school of Purvimimamsa, Karma Mimamsa, the logic school of Gotama, Nyaya, and there's a philosophy based on grammar school was founded by Bhartrihari in the 9th century, 10th century. All of those schools of philosophy insist that sounds and the words they combine into are eternal. The individual utterances of words are no doubt temporary, but as far as these philosophers are concerned, the words themselves are eternal. If the activity of speech, which every human being takes part in, most human beings talk, it is in essence eternal, then there is no reason why the Supreme Lord's Leelas cannot be eternal just because they are activities. Activity means change, but some changes have persistence to them. And some activities, like spiritual activities, can be eternal. Okay. Advanced devotees of the Lord meditate on his pastimes to contact the pastimes and derive sublime benefit. either by remembering them or actually joining them. You make contact with the pastimes. Ultimately, the devotees would like to personally join the pastimes. But this would not be possible if the pastimes they remembered, performed by the Lord in the past, and recorded in Scripture were done and gone. If the pastime was finished and didn't still go on, there's no hope of joining it unless you're going to travel backwards in time. But in the future, there's no future hope of joining a pastime that's finished. We're supposed to meditate on Krishna's pastimes because they're not finished. We can still join them. Tatra tasya janmanat prakritat tasmad vilakshanatvam prakrita janm anukarane avir bhava matratvam kvachit tad anukaranena va ajayamano bahuda vijayate iti shute. Specifically, now we analyze the Lord's birth a little more specifically. The sense in which the Lord's birth is different from material birth is that it is simply his making an appearance. Whether in imitation of material birth or sometimes not even imitating it. This accords with the words of Shruti, he is never born but takes his birth in many ways. Tadyata, I'm quoting from the 10th canto, 3rd chapter. Devakyam devarupinyam Vishnu sarva guhashayaha avirasid yata prachyam dishinduriva pushkalaha. Then Lord Vishnu, who resides in everyone's heart, like the full moon appearing on the eastern horizon, appeared in Devaki, who resembled a goddess. He appeared. He wasn't born. He just appeared. I've changed the translation a little bit here. And also a statement in the 7th canto, 8th chapter. Satyam vidatum nijabritya bhashitam vyaptim jabhutesh akileshu chatmanaha Adrishyatatyadbhutarupamudvahan stambe sabayam namrigam namanusham. To prove that the words of his servant were true. Servant were true. And to show that he indeed pervades all created things. He then exhibited a wonderful form, never before seen, neither that of a man nor that of a lion, in the pillar of the assembly hall. That's the appearance of Lord Narasimhadeva. Kardamam viryam apanna iti yatra shikalabat kapila dev avatara pasangepi kardamasya bhakti samartya vashibhuta iti eva vyakeyam. Now there's a statement that Lord Kapila Dev appeared in the semen of Kartama. That sounds like he was born. But there's another way to explain it. In the context of Sri Kapiladev's incarnation, moreover, the statement that, quote, he entered the semen of Kartama should be explained as meaning that he submitted himself to the devotional competency of Kartama. There's a play on the word viryam. Kardamam viryam. Virya shabda nyayas tu prasidham putratvam api shlishnam bhavati ityeva marta. The word semen, by its double meaning, the word virya has a double meaning, is used here to express the well-known fact of his being Kardama's son. In other words, virya can just mean the potency. And here it's the devotional potency. The power of his love. Lord Kapiladev submitted to the power of the love of Kardama. And that's what it means, he resorted to the virya of Kardama. Not that he was literally born from him. in some material way. Yeah, let people think that he was born. You know, it's part of the show. He's pretending to be born. So it's supposed to look like it. Not just to bewilder demons, but to give devotees pleasure. Even though they know the Lord's not born, he's pretending to be born. And that's pleasurable to the devotees and bewildering to the atheists. Okay, there's a commentary here. The process of material birth is not at all under the control of the person born, and not even much under the control of the parents. The force of sexual attraction initiates the process, and the rest is carried out by internal mechanisms unknown to the parents and the child. The mother, the father, they don't know what's going on inside the womb. It just happens. And apart from the mechanics of birth, there is the dynamics of karma that determined beforehand that a certain person would be conceived to take birth in the womb of certain parents. That's fixed by the past karma. No control over that either. Who's going to be whose parent? Lord Kapiladeva described this to his mother, the same Kapiladeva who we said took birth, but he's explaining how birth is not that simple. It's not under the material birth is not under the control of the parents. Kapiladeva says, Karmana daivane trena jantur dehopapattaye striyak pravishta udaram pumso retat kanashrayaha. Under the supervision of the Supreme Lord and according to the result of his work, the living entity, the soul, is made to enter into the womb of a mother through the particle of male semen to assume a particular type of body. That's material process. The Supreme Lord enjoys taking birth into this world, but not by the same forced dynamics of karma and procreation. He often pretends to be born as others, but sometimes his appearance is unprecedented. I think I spelled it wrong. As in the case of Lord Nrsimha's birth from a pillar struck by Hiranyakashipu, and Lord Varaha's birth from the nostril of Brahma. Krishna seemed to take birth from Vasudeva and Devaki, somewhat normally, at least to the extent that his parents were human beings. But still, many of the circumstances of his birth were exceptional. He came from his mother's womb in the form of four-armed Vishnu, fully ornamented with crown and weapons. And after he became Prakritak Shishuhu, a normal-looking child, on Mother Devaki's request. Then he assumed for Yogamaya to put everyone in Kamsa's dungeon to sleep, and for Vasudeva to carry him away to Gokula. Lord Kapila's birth, well, that's an unusual birth, Lord Kapila's birth millions of years before Krishna, it's an apparently normal birth. Well, not very normal. He came out as four-armed Vishnu. But anyway, he seemed to take birth. Lord Kapila's birth millions of years ago, before Krishna's, was even more normal. Even to the extent of Lord Kapila agreeing to enter his father's semen. But this was not necessary for his birth, as it is necessary in material birth. Kapiladeva did this only to exchange the loving devotion of Kardama and to remind the world that Kardama was his chosen father. The word viryam, echoed in the Latin word vir, and the English word virility, means first potency and manliness, and then, by extension, it means semina. There is technical medical term for semina. A few terms. Lala is one of them. But poetically, it's called virya, the manliness. If you don't want to be clinical and medical in your terminology, you can use the poetic term, virya. Okay, going on a bit. Tata karmano vailakshanyam sarupanana vilasa matratvam. In the same way, the special nature of the Lord's activity is that simply, that it is simply the ecstatic sport he enjoys in his inner self. And this is indicated in the Sutra of the Vedanta. Tadyata, how his activity is just the ecstatic sport he enjoys within himself. Tadyata lokavat tu lila kaivalyam iti. The Vedanta Sutra says, but as it is also seen in the ordinary world, this is simply his pleasure. Okay, how is that seen in the ordinary world? That's commented on. Vyakyatam cha tatvavadibi yata loke matasya suko dvekad eva nityadi lila natu prayojana pekshaya evam ev eshvarasya. This sutra is explained by the tatvavadis. In this world, a drunkard engages in dancing and other pastimes only out of his excessive joy, and not for any special purpose. The Supreme Lord's pastimes are also like this. Narayana samhitayam cha shrishyadikam harir naiva prayojanam apekshyatu kurute kevalanandad yatamattasya nartanam purnanandasya tasyeha prayojanamati kutaha mukta aptyapta kamaksyu kimutasya tilatmanaha iti. The Narayana Samhita also states, Lord Hari does the acts of creation and so on, not for any purpose, but simply out of joy, like a drunkard's dancing. How can he, who is always full in ecstasy, have in his mind any intent to carry out? Even liberated souls have already achieved whatever might be desirable. What to speak then of the soul of all souls? So it's just sport, it's just play. Rough, crude example, not a complete example, the Lord is not drunk, but just like a drunkard has no purpose in what he does, he just wanders around, sings and dances. Similarly, the Lord does these things without any particular purpose. Commentary. Gajendra spoke of the special nature of the Supreme Lord's birth, activities, names, forms, and qualities. No material such, but special kind of birth, activities, names, forms, and qualities. That was the verse at the beginning of the Anuchet. Each of these kinds of uniqueness will be identified in this Anuchet. The Lord is born uniquely and he acts uniquely. The lifelong activities of a soul conditioned by karmic reactions are as little under his control as was his birth. Our birth is not under our control, and neither is everything that happens after our birth. From infancy to old age, he is constantly obsessed by purposes to accomplish. Young children seem to have no purpose in their play, but they are also impelled by their conditioning to behave the way they do, even in their games and diversions. A grown-up in an abnormal condition such as intoxication seems also to be acting without purpose, but only temporarily. The drunkard awakens from his hangover and has to go back to work. And the child has to grow up and face the reality of his programmed impulses. The Supreme Lord, however, in fact acts without conditioned purpose. Like the child and the drunkard, but without their deluded pretense. His only purpose is pleasure. He wants to share enjoyment with his devotees, liberated souls, whom he grants his own unique power to act without purpose. He empowers them to also act without purpose, his devotees. The Lord's devotees have no aim other than making him happy. Okay, that's the commentary on that. Okay, we'll stop for now and continue tomorrow. Hare Krishna. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.